Well, this is the office hour for from session two. I am going to address a few of the questions that were asked. I probably won't have time to cover everything, but if you ask a question that you feel is needed an answer and I did not cover that for any reason, feel free to email me or give me a call. Due to time, we may not get to all the questions that probably have been asked. But I have selected a few. See. One question is it a good practice to tell your audience when you are giving your opinion versus informing them of your research? Yes, it is a good practice because you do not want to confuse opinion with fact. And if you are reporting fact, then it is important to versus telling someone this is my opinion, in my opinion this is what happened and things like that. It makes the difference for the audience, because as we're going to be talking about supporting material later on in this class, you would be able to make the distinction between opinion that are usually unfounded or maybe based on fact, but it's not really verifiable. Fact is verifiable. Someone can go in and find the information if you cite your source and let them know where you get that information, then they can also go and verify what you said to see whether it's true or false. So if you do not differentiate between your opinion versus what is fact and research-based, then they won't know which information they can verify and which is not. So if you mention your opinion and they go to try to verify it, then they probably won't be able to because it's not there. And you probably did not tell them where the source was so that they could verify it because it was your opinion. So yes, differentiate between fact and opinion when let the audience know what is your opinion and what is fact. Second question, what does this textbook mean by inflammatory language and exaggerated claims? I think that student did a great job listening. That's Anthony Brewer, I think. Listed the page number for us on page 73. There's a statement about inflammatory language and exaggerating claims. We would say inflammatory language is any language that incites anger, basically. We know there are statements that you can make in a speech that may attack a particular group or a particular social group or racial group or any type of group that can be angered by a statement that is considered inflammatory language. It's things that incite anger, basically. And if you remember in our last election campaign, that we saw a lot of that. A lot of people really got angered. I got angry with some statements that were made by some candidates, and some people never really got over those statements. That's why we see people on the street still protesting their right and things like that about because there were statements that were made that really affected a lot of different groups of people. When it comes to exaggerating claims, it would say any claim that you make that That basically promised more than can be delivered. That would be an exaggerating claim, because we probably seen a lot of that, particularly in commercials, infomercials and advertisements and things like that. There are probably some claims that are made. You say, really? That can happen? Seriously? In your head, there's something sounds fishy with that statement. If I said you can lose 22 pounds in 3 days by taking this by taking this product, then obviously you probably will start questioning that statement. And in speeches, you would want to avoid making any claim that is really far-fetched, that it's not real. I mean, you probably say that just to get attention, which is why what marketers do. They make those claims that really get you to listening to start listening in, but some people do not make the distinction, so they believe in some of those claims and really invest in them and act on them without really knowing the impact or the consequences of those statements. So, advertisement, political speeches. Again, you probably have heard a lot of exaggerating claims. If you vote for me, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then once they get in office, they figure out that the reality is, I can't do this as fast as I wanted to, because now it's real thing. It's not just making promise anymore. It's about actually accomplishing what I had promised. So this is a real thing that we probably have lived through many circumstances or situations throughout our lives. One particular example of a guy that, if you Google Kevin Trudeau, you probably find him as one of the guy who has made a lot of claim about natural remedies. He has written, I mean, a ton of books about, how people can get rid of ailment or illness just by following some steps that he gives, and a lot of people fell prey to those statements and actually got angry when their situations did not get better. So those are basically what we mean, making statement, making claims for things that you cannot really deliver when it comes to the reality of it. And so in public speaking or in speeches, you probably, unless you want to make a claim just to get attention and then clear it out, say, okay, no, you're not going to be a millionaire just by taking this speech class. But I can promise you, you will improve your public speaking at least a little bit by taking this class. So saying you would be a millionaire by giving speeches just by taking the speech class would be an outrageous or an exaggerated claim. All right, so let's look at some other questions here. We still have a little bit of time. Another question, what are some practical ways to help overcome boredom and fatigue? These two seem to be the hardest distractions for me when listening. The student is referring to some of the things that we talked about in regard to listening. And I did ask you to identify, what are some of the habits or some of the things that you can identify right now that hinder you from becoming an effective listener, a good listener. And for this particular student, she seems to think boredom and fatigue are two things that have caused distractions for her when it comes to listening. Well, fatigue usually is a result of lack of rest. So obviously, if you want to avoid fatigue, then I would say try to get a good night rest. When it comes to boredom, it would be dependent on your interest in the particular subject that is being discussed. So obviously, if you have no interest in what is being discussed in the presentation, the information, most likely you would find your mind wandering, and you'll probably find other things to occupy your mind because you just are not interested. And that's one of the things that I found a lot with college students sometimes. A lot of time we just don't know better to know that, well, this may not necessarily be something that I'm interested in, but it may have some benefit sometimes because we may not know the benefits until we really are in the position to actually use the information. This leads to actually another question, I think, that talks about what, how do you continue to listen to when you are not, let's see. How do you still listen to something that you are not interested in? That's how another question that really connects very well to boredom and listening. Because if you're not interested, then you're going to have some difficulties remaining focused in the information that is being presented. So I don't have a one answer to this question in terms of how do you avoid boredom. I would say most likely you would not, if voluntarily attend a presentation or a conference that you have no interest in. Okay. When it comes to a problem to have to listen to things that you're not interested in, maybe when you are considered what we call the captive audience. Okay, you have to attend this conference because your job, your employer feels this will be helpful to improve your skill. Okay, well, originally you may not have had any interest in attending that conference, but because it's going to benefit you in some way, you become a captive audience. And the speaker often will understand that most people are here because they need this information, and they will try to make you understand why you are here, and what this information is going to do for you, and why you should be here. Because before you probably did not have any interest in it before, but once you start getting into it and see the value in terms of what that's going to do for you, then you probably would start developing some interest. Because now you see there is something in it for you. Sometimes we tend to be to look for the bottom line. Why am I learning this? Why is this going to do for me? So the once the speaker make it clear that, okay, this is what this is going to do for you. If you are armed with this information, you will be able to do this, 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 and that, and you will be able to do your job better. For college classes, okay, obviously besides getting a class completed so that you can pass and move on to the next one, you learn valuable information that probably before you took the class, you had no idea what you were going to learn. But if you stop listening just because, just by looking at the title of this class, I am not going to be interested, and you shut yourself up, and then you really put yourself at a disadvantage to learn things that you would probably need that you don't even know you need them. Okay. So, one thing that I would say is always have an open mind and don't really discard or reject or put any information away until you have really listened to it and decide, oh, I could learn something from this, but I probably would not be using it immediately, but you may be using it later on in life that you never know. Okay. So always go to any information get any information with an open mind and don't try to disregard anything just because you don't know yet that you will need it. Okay. And just a few more questions. Do speakers sometimes memorize their speeches? Okay. We definitely will be talking about delivery methods, I believe probably in session, either session four, session five, I think, maybe session four. So whichever session we cover, chapter 12, I think, that's when we will talk about delivery methods. So for a quick answer to this, yes, memorization is one of the methods of delivery. And some people are really good at that because they train their mind and their brain to really do a good job at memorizing information and be able to present it without looking at notes. So you'd be surprised of how powerful our mind is when we train it, and our brain is when we train it to do things. People have trained their brain to memorize, I mean, unbelievable amount of information. And for some of us, memorization may be really daunting, and we're looking at anything that you have to memorize word for word really becomes a very difficult for us. But you can train your brain to do that, actually, to memorize daunting amount of information. Yeah. So quick answer, yes, speakers can use memorization, and they do use memorization as one of the method for speech, to deliver speeches. I like this one. How much can a speaker make? All right, so we're getting into the nitty-gritty right now in terms of, okay, well, if you are an ex-president, a former president, like Bill Clinton, or a former first lady like Hillary Clinton, well, I would say you can make a lot with your speeches. So it all depends on how much people are willing to pay you for the information you are providing. So I don't think I have really a figure to tell you all speakers make this, because that would not be accurate. It would be the type of speeches you're making and who is willing to pay and how much they're willing to pay for the information you have to provide. I believe Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, they probably charge upward of $200,000 for speeches. And you could probably Google that and find that yourself in terms of how much people in that echelon are making for speeches they give.
I just read an article where Obama was offered $400,000 to speak at an engagement. So that was pretty crazy.
Good. I'm glad that you had some exact figure. But that's basically, you're right. It is crazy. So whoever asked the question, if you'd like to become a president of the United States and then be able to speak, then yes, you can make a lot of money. Other than that, I don't know what type of speeches you will be giving, so it's hard for me to tell you how much you will be making just by giving speeches. So there you go. Let's see. Okay, I think those were the main questions that I thought we needed to go ahead and address from last week. This question had to do with the easiest way for you to memorize something. I did talk about some tips last week about some of the ways you can, strategies that you can use to memorize things. So I would suggest you go back and take a look at that first part of the video, actually the last part of the video from last week, if you want to review those tips that I give for memorization and so forth. So, all right, this is the end of the office hour from session two, and I am going to stop the recording and then we will be back in just a few moments here.